This is a podcast for the MA in Online Journalism at Birmingham City University. In this podcast, I'm going to talk about search engine optimization, what's normally known in the industry by its acronym SEO. I'm going to talk about three things. I'm going to talk about how search engines understand your content and how they see your articles and other media. I'm going to talk about then techniques for improving the findability of that content, how you can make it easy for search engines to display your content to someone who is searching for the thing that you are writing about. And finally, I'm going to cover a bit of bad practice to avoid and why you might do that. Now, to begin with, I need to talk a little bit about history in terms of optimization. We have always, as journalists, optimized our content. In print, for example, we actually specifically employed people to create headlines that would grab people's attention and increase the chances that someone might buy your copy of a newspaper on the newsstand. And these were called sub-editors. And sub-editors are still around now, but increasingly they've been laid off as newspapers have moved into other forms of production. Of course, broadcast media has its own techniques as well, like the tease. How do you make sure that people watch a programme? How do you make sure that people stay around? What SEO adds to the mix is optimising content for a different context. Essentially, people consume content in a whole range of different contexts, and looking at the same story and how it's presented in print, on an advertising hoarding and online is a good example of this. So, for example, in the slides for this podcast, you'll see an example of a story about the Birmingham City boss, Carson Young, and him blocking the benefits package for Karen Brady, the managing director. Now, if you look at the print headline for this, it's very punny, it's very short and succinct, and you have to kind of know the people involved. The website version of the same headline, however, is much longer. It uses full names. It's much more easy to understand if you might see it in search engine results, for example, or on social media. And that's the key difference in context. Generally, with online articles, we're going to stumble across that headline in search engine results or in an update that someone has shared on social media, and we need to understand it instantly and decide whether we want to read the article. In this respect, it's useful to understand the language that your readers actually use. Another example, which you'll find in the slides for this podcast, is the eruption of the volcano in Japan, Mount Ontake. Now, when Mount Ontake erupted, newspapers and news websites decided to focus on the term Japan volcano rather than the phrase Mount Ontake. And the reason for that was that if you went online on a site called Google Trends and searched for Japan volcano, you could see how many people were searching on Google for that term compared to other terms like Mount Ontake or Japan volcano eruption. And Google Trends is a very useful tool to find out what are the most popular searches around a particular term and what language people are using to search. If you know that people are searching for the specific name of a mountain, you're going to use that. If you know that they're searching for Japan volcano, you will use that instead. And that's what happened. Now, alongside this focus on headlines and the words and language that people are using is a similar focus on analytics. Analytics is the process of measuring the behaviour of people on your website and around your website, or indeed on other platforms like social media. And most platforms now, including WordPress and Medium, include built-in analytics where you can see some very basic statistics for how people have encountered your site, how many people have read an article, and so on. There's some key jargon that I'd like to explain around analytics before going any further. Firstly, the term hits or visits or page views. These three terms are often used interchangeably, but they're actually quite different things. So, for example, a hit used to mean every item of content on a page that was loaded by the user. So it might be an image was one hit, the HTML page was another, and so on. But generally these days we talk about hits to mean how many page visits someone has had. But visits or page views is a much clearer term. A page view means someone has viewed a page, one page. That might be the same person more than once. And that's an important distinction, because another common term is unique user. Often we talk about the number of pages viewed and the number of unique users. You might have 100 unique users viewing 200 pages between them. Another term you might come across is bounce rate. This is the percentage of users who leave, who bounce off your site without having looked at more than one page. So they land on your site, read the article, and don't read anything else. And then there's the broader term engagement, which refers to what, you know, whether people have spent a lot of time, whether they've taken some sort of action on your page, and so on. Now, all this is important in terms of writing for the web, because often news organizations will do tests where they might try two different versions of a headline, for example, and see which one performs best. Each one of those versions will be given to different people when they visit the website randomly. You can look at the analytics on a site by using a tool like Google Analytics. You need to put some code on the site in order for it to be able to read that. And you can also get analytics on sites like Facebook. And there are tools like Chartbeat, which are used quite widely within news organisations for real-time analytics, so you can see live how the site is performing. Now, I want to move on to a different area of SEO now and talk specifically about how search engines understand your content. And I'm going to talk about three levels around that, in particular what I would call content level, code level, and the context level. Firstly then, the content level. This is the content that is actually in your article. So for example, the headline, the first paragraph, any links, any tables. Obviously, essentially, when a search engine comes across your web page, it will store all of that content. But what it does is it gives different parts of content different amounts of weighting. So the headline of your article is going to be much more significant in giving an indication of what it's about than, for example, the very last paragraph in your article. So the search engine is going to say that the words in that headline are a better indication, they are more heavily weighted in the way that it understands that content. Likewise, subheadings can be quite important, and they will be given extra weighting as a result. The very first paragraph is going to be more important than the last paragraph. Even bold and italic text can be seen as more significant, and any links, any lists or tables will also be looked at a little bit more closely by Google in order to try and work out what your article is about. So for that reason, it's important to try and make sure that you are using the right terms that your audience is going to be searching for, in order to make it easy for them to find your content. And that's one of the reasons why we don't use puns or clever wordplay in headlines or the first paragraph of an article if we're trying to make it easy for people to find this story. So as a first step, it's a good idea to identify what are the key words that your story is about. Is it about a particular person? Is it about a particular place or an event? And you should make sure that you are mentioning those terms in the headline, in the first paragraph, and in other places like subheadings, for example. The second level that SEO works on, the second level that search engines work on, is the code underpinning your page, the metadata about the web page itself. That includes information like the title of the page, the web address, and for multimedia like images and audio and video, it will look for alternative descriptions, what's called the alt tag. It will look for captions around it. It will look for tags and categories. It will even look at things like the location of your website and how quickly it loads. For this reason, you should be careful, certainly, about images that represent text. Instead, you should use actual text if you can. You should make sure that the title of your page, your article, is the same as the headline, or at least has keywords in it. You can also sometimes customize the meta description of your article, and the meta description is what appears in search engine results underneath your headline. And by the way, the title of your page is what's used in search results as well. So these are not only important to help search engines understand your content, but also your meta description will have a big impact on whether people decide to actually click on that article when they see it in search engine results. And on the slides for this podcast, you'll see some examples of some quite bad meta descriptions where and how those look in search engine results. Structured data is increasingly becoming important in search as well. So, for example, the New York Times changed their recipes into a more structured format, and that had a massive impact on traffic from search engines. It increased it by 52%. Linking things like your Google Plus profile to your content also helps. Increasingly, Google is looking at how fast your website loads or your web page, what's called Web Performance Optimization, or WPO. And it's also looking at things like whether your content is optimized for a mobile phone. So, for example, if you don't have what's called responsive design and someone's searching on a mobile phone, Google might rank your content less useful for them. The third level of SEO is what I would call context, or the reputation of your web page. And by this I mean things like how many people are linking to that web page, how authoritative are those people. For example, if the BBC links to your article, then that's going to be worth a lot more than your friend who's got a blog with five pages on it. This is called PageRank. PageRank is one of the founding algorithms of Google. It's named after Larry Page, one of the founders. And it's this idea that the more links that link to something, the more likely that is going to be of use. But that's not the only indication of reputation. If you update your content regularly, then Google and other search engines are going to decide that you are more reliable, perhaps more authoritative, more professional, and rank you accordingly. Another aspect is going to be the amount you talk about a particular subject. So, for example, you'll see some publications will post multiple articles about the same subject to show search engines that they are, again, dedicated, professional, authoritative sources on that subject. On the slides for this podcast, you'll see an example of coverage of the Great British Bake Off, where the Daily Mail published three separate stories on the same event on this TV programme in order to really try and show Google how much resource, how much effort they're paying to covering this. Finally, then, there's bad practice in SEO. This is often called black hat SEO. In other words, the people wearing the white hats are the good guys, the people wearing the black hats are the bad guys. And black hat SEO is penalized by search engines. So these are techniques that have been invented as ways to try to game the system that search engines use. And search engines have designed ways of identifying these and penalising these wherever possible. One of these, for example, one quite old technique, is called link farming or link exchanging. This is where a group of people get together or agree to link to each other, a kind of a you scratch my back and I'll scratch yours arrangement. This is obviously going to be quite obvious to spot by a search engine. It notices that everyone's linking to each other, and if it thinks that this is going on, it will penalise those sites accordingly. So don't ever agree to kind of link to this person if they link to you, or certainly don't join one of these link exchange schemes. Another very old technique was to use invisible text, in other words, white text on a white background, which would be invisible to a human, but would be seen by a search engine. A similar technique is keyword stuffing. This is where you kind of write something in a way that has lots and lots of the same keywords, but isn't actually very readable to a human. Clearly, one of the key factors that a search engine is looking for is not just the text on the page, but whether people spend a lot of time on it, whether they click on it, whether they share it. So the keywords really are only a small part of making your content understandable by search engines. It should certainly, absolutely be understandable by humans first and foremost. And that means being aware, for example, that search engines are going to monitor how many people click on that link to your website, if it's a link in a search on a search engine results page, and also, you know, whether they come straight back and so on. One of the things about the Chrome browser is that Google now knows more than ever before what people do on websites, how long they spend, and so on. And remember, of course, Google also owns Google Analytics, which measures likewise what people do on websites. The other term for black hat SEO is called link spamming, and this takes a number of forms, but broadly is the idea of people paying for links, and this is essentially not allowed by Google. So if someone tries to buy a link on your site, in other words, they say, I will pay you £50 if you link to my site, that is, if Google knows you're doing this, they will penalise your site, they will push it down the rankings. So you should definitely not do that. What you can do is add what's called a no-follow tag to that link, which tells a search engine not to follow it. This is kind of the equivalent of saying this is an advert rather than editorial. Now, of course, all of this is not about chasing traffic. You should certainly monitor your analytics, but try lots of experiments and see what works. Don't just chase things that are trending, keywords that people are using a lot. You should be reporting about what is important to your audience and what is important, you think, in the world in general, and finding ways to connect that to your audience. You'll find examples on the slides. For example, there's an example of a article which was originally written with the headline "Moo for Villa Park, you bet." That was changed to "Jose Mourinho for Villa Park, you bet," because Jose Mourinho is going to be the term that people are searching for, not moo. And the URL for that article was also changed to be even clearer still. So the URL said "Jose Mourinho, Aston Villa Park betting odds, Tim Sherwood successor." The URL, it doesn't matter whether that reads or not, because it isn't what people use to read the article, but it does help search engines understand the content. So just to sum up the key points, there are three levels of SEO, broadly speaking: the content that you write, the code that is underpinning it, and the context that surrounds it in terms of who is linking to it, how often it's been updated, how quick it is, how much you write about that subject, and so on. In some ways, the context is the most important element, but also the one that you have least control over. And that's probably how it should be, because it's not up to you to decide whether your content is authoritative or relevant. It's to some extent a judgment made by other websites and by users in the way that they behave and link. What you can control is the content, so you can make that clear. You can make sure that it's understandable to the readers and to search engines. You can control the code to a certain extent, making sure that headings are formatted as headings rather than just bold, making sure that the URL is edited to include keywords. And you can influence the context insofar as you can be regularly updating, you can be dedicated, and you can show through your persistence that you are an authority on this subject. The second point is really to make it easy for search engines to understand your content, and that involves that clarity, that that need to be literal, to be clear, all skills that are important in journalism as a whole. And finally, on the front of SEO, remember that it takes time. In a lot of cases, it's going to be very hard for you to rank on search engines very highly within 6 months. It does take a long time because most people give up. And to show that you are authoritative and professional, you do have to be persistent and authoritative and professional, engaged in your field. So if you keep publishing, you will see marked differences in your search engine rankings as you get past the 1 year point and so on. You'll find lots more reading on Moodle and the slides, of course. And if you want to know more about SEO, you'll find lots of links in my bookmarks on Pinboard that are bookmarked with the tag SEO.